Howdy folks, this is Just Rob, President and Program Director of WUSB's Student Executive Board. We hope our listening family and all our Stony Brook University classmates and families are managing well in these precarious times. As for us, we are all at home and doing our best to keep WUSB on air remotely so we can keep you entertained and informed each day. Please help us stay on the air by calling 631-632-6901 or toll free at 1-888-632-9872 or visit us online at wusb.fm/pledge.
WUSB, the most dangerous station in the nation.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. Let's just start the show, right? If you could spare the moments, Kyle, that would be nice.
Just because I'm multitasking.
You have three laptops going at the same time. What are you up to?
Oh, a lot goodness. Of different things.
All right. But we have a show, okay? It's Tuesday at 6.
I understand it's
and
Tuesday.
The alarm goes off at 2:05 so that we're ready. And I just would like you to maybe focus on what we're talking about tonight.
And what... pray tell, are we discussing this evening?
I'm
off the wall.
Going to ask you that question.
The fact
that neither one of us knows indicates that we have not planned this out sufficiently.
Statues? Statues coming down.
Statues are a good thing to talk about, absolutely. You want to tear down some statues? I mean, it seems to be the thing, so why not? If there are any statues of Trump out there, and there aren't, so that's easy.
Probably won't be. There ought not to be.
Do you think there ever will be a statue of Trump anywhere? Listeners, are there any statues of Trump? Seriously. Not in his house. That doesn't count. I mean, has any right-wing community somewhere decided to erect a statue of him? I don't think even they're that crazy.
I've seen cardboard cutouts.
Well, I've seen him burning an effigy. Does that count? No. No. Or maybe in foreign countries. Maybe there's some fascist right-wing dictatorship that has a Trump statue somewhere. You know what? They can have it. They can keep it. I'm not going to go over there and tear it down.
They're like floor samples. They're trying to sell them.
But if I find out there's a Trump statue anywhere around here, it's going to be in danger. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, it won't last long.
No, not with me around. The news continues to be really, really interesting. Vibrant. Scary. But necessary. You know, it's... we're living through historical times, and It's weird because we have the TV on in the background watching all this propaganda. It's not really propaganda because it's CNN, but, I mean, it is propaganda in a way, but they're not doing Trump propaganda. They're doing kind of anti-Trump propaganda, you know what I mean? I think it's somewhat balanced, but whenever you watch mass media, you always have to be wary. You always have to question anything they say. Like, just earlier today, they I don't know what point they were trying to prove. They had a black sheriff from Georgia saying that the most recent killing of a black man in Atlanta was justified. It's like, okay, you managed to find a black sheriff that would say something incredibly stupid, divisive, and wrong. What are you trying to prove? I don't understand what the point of that was. That's the kind of thing mass media does.
Yeah, relying on framing and language and that sort of careful editing, you can really end up with a mess if you aren't careful, and various angles can be abused. Just like when you photograph, I mean, different angles and so forth can convey different things when you're talking about graphic communication or visual communication. So in writing, it's the same thing. What are they saying, and how are things being characterized? These are crucial questions to be an engaged and intelligent consumer of all the forms of media that are out there.
Right, right. I like to be critical just about everything, which means that I'm never really part of a particular group, never really feel comfortable in crowds.
I think a lot of Americans are. It's not unusual, but to varying degrees, to a very wide variance of degree.
There are a lot of crowds out there, and I am with those crowds. In fact, last week, when I talk about this, we went to a Black Lives Matter rally, but it's kind of typical that we went to the rally, but we couldn't find the rally. I don't know how we pulled this off. We right after the show, we found out it was happening in Smithtown, so we hightailed it over there. I got stuck behind a boat, though. Remember that?
Yeah, somebody pulling a boat out of the water.
Right in front of me, someone pulls out with a boat, and they're going 10 miles an hour on a state road, by the way, which is illegal. All right, but regardless, so we finally got there. There's cops everywhere. Smithtown is closed down. I mean, it was already closed down because of the pandemic, but now you have cops just standing around. There's no traffic. I parked by a bank, and we just walked around town.
Observed.
And, we saw a lot of cops. We heard a lot of cops talking on their radios. That's how we were able to find out anything about the demonstration, because there weren't many other people around. There were a few, and they were as confused as we were. But apparently, the marchers had gone all the way over to Hop Hog. Which is, it's quite a hike, but they were basically marching to the precinct, which makes sense. And it was a peaceful demonstration. I wish we had gotten there earlier and actually seen more of the demonstration, but it felt good just making an effort and seeing something. We saw a lot of people that were coming back later on. We saw people that were arriving by train, which is interesting. People came by train to be a part of this. We saw bottles of water in the street for demonstrators. It's really well thought out, leaving bottles of water for people who are marching with signs. And the cops were behaving. Well, of course, there weren't really that many people, but it was weird to see how panicked they were. And by that I mean there were so many of them, and they were from all different precincts. Now here in Suffolk County, you can tell a cop car what precinct it's from by the first number of the three-digit number that it has. So, for instance, 612 is a car from the 6th precinct. Four, ones that begin with 4, that's the 4th precinct, which is where Smithtown is. We saw cars beginning with 3, cars beginning with 2. All different precincts were coming into Smithtown. All these cops were standing around. They had a staging area in a parking lot. And then we saw these Suffolk County buses, these little mini buses driving out. They were being driven by cops. I don't know what that was for, if it was for transporting lots of cops or transporting people that they were going to arrest.
Probably both.
Yeah, but it was scary to see, because in New York City, you know, they tried that. They tried to commandeer a bus, and the transit authority would not have it. The union said, no, we're not gonna give you our bus. We're not going to drive for you. That's not our job. But apparently in Suffolk County, not a big deal. And, those little buses were being driven by police. So that was interesting to see. I just like to notice what they're doing, you know, how...
Yeah, those details.
Little details. They do matter. And being able to overhear what's being said on the radio, that's always very informative, too. We talked about this on the other show, the danger in New York City of the radio broadcast going encrypted, which means people like us won't be able to hear anything. Unless you're actually standing next to a cop, you won't be able to hear what's going over the radio. And nothing to me is as scary as that. Silence, just no accountability whatsoever. That is something that we have. Usually, encryption is something we fight for. In this particular case, these are public servants. They have to be accountable. They cannot hide any more than they're already hiding, and they have to hide a lot less than they already are. So, yeah, that was our little foray into Black Lives Matter March. I want to do more. I want to, you know, it felt good later when we were driving away. We were passing people coming back from I guess the precinct where they marched to, and just honking our horns and everybody waving,
trying to be supportive.
Yeah, and I realized, you know, that's really as much as I've done so far is honk my horn and wave my hand. I got to do more than that. I got to do more. We all have to do more. But it was a good feeling getting out there, and it's great to see how many people involved in these things are thinking it through, wearing masks, little thing like that. You know, we were walking around in Port Jefferson, which is a town further to the east, and it's a crapshoot. It really is. Half the time, you'll see people that are conscientious and wearing masks and being careful. The other times you see just these dumbasses walking around as if nothing is wrong, as if everything is normal, not wearing masks, large groups, hanging out in large groups, and it makes you angry, it makes you frustrated, it makes you sad, because that's the kind of attitude that's going to keep this going for much, much longer than it has to. If we were all wearing masks for I think 3 weeks is what they said, this could go away if everybody wore masks. But, of course, you know, because Rand Paul, there are always going to be people that don't wear masks, and it's because of them that this virus will stick around. If you're wearing a mask and you have the virus, it's very unlikely you'll be able to give it to somebody else because the mask will prevent the droplets from getting out there. You know, it's easy. So that's done. That's finished if everybody wore a mask. Theoretically, that ends the virus. And then the virus will die because it won't be spreading around for a period of time. 3 weeks seems about right. It's simple, but so complex when you have all these contrarian people, all these conspiracy theory people, all these people convinced that it doesn't affect them. And nothing is worse than watching our dumbass president continuing to waddle around without a mask on, and to say it doesn't apply to him, to see all the people in his administration, crowds of them, crowds of white faces just talking to each other, thinking that this is just Democratic propaganda or conspiracy of some sort, and planning for a massive rally in Oklahoma later this week. Oh, yeah, it was going to be on Juneteenth. That was a bad idea. Even Trump realized eventually that was a bad idea. I have a feeling he didn't even know what Juneteenth was. Now it's for June 20th. Okay, great. That's about the most he's done for civil rights yet, is move it up a day. Back a day. So it's scary to think all these people are going to be gathering. Unlike the Black Lives Matter protesters wearing masks and being careful, these people are probably going to be indoors and not wearing masks. And what are they thinking? What is going to happen? I mean, I hope that the virus is not in that area to the degree where it spreads like wildfire, but it very well could be, and this could be the start of something truly bad.
One thing that I'm hearing in what you're saying that bothers me a lot, and that I don't think we're hearing about at all in this phase going back to whatever kind of normal it is just the lack of availability of PPE still. I think you're absolutely right, and like decisions and the way people are behaving is totally regrettable in a lot of what we've observed. But part of that, I think, is the availability of really high quality masks and gloves and some of this equipment that we've been you know, stockpiling for first responders, that we've been donating. The equipment that people have been making is really good, too. We've been involved in making reusable masks and so forth. But one part of getting back to normal is being able to, like, buy a box of gloves at a local store and not have to buy a version that isn't certified to the U.S. standard. All these KN95 masks are the Chinese standard. We have all these exceptions from the FDA that are still sort of being used. There's a lot of, like, ads and so forth for people that don't normally make masks, right? Like, people that are kind of getting in on the market, a lot of third parties and fly-by-night, I would say. A lot of fly-by-night vendors trying to sell you some new and improved, like, as-seen-on-TV-style equipment. But just normal stuff, like if I wanted to paint something and I needed a respirator, or if I wanted to work on something like an engine, where would I get those gloves? Like, it's, to me, not normal yet when I'm working on projects or just maybe going out in public like this. But the lack of availability of that equipment to everyday people, I think, is something that's not really being looked at. It just seems like we're okay with not knowing when, like, 3M or when American vendors, the typical places where you would find, like, if I go to an auto store, I can't find gloves. Like, and I think a lot of companies are going into all these back channels and finding really obscure vendors and the quality variations and so on. So to a degree, I guess I'm not saying there isn't blame on the behavior of people wearing masks, but I can certainly, I certainly empathize, because even the masks people are wearing aren't that good. They're mm-hmm. the surgical ones. And those aren't actually, they're not N95, they're not up to our, like, NIOSH standards and so forth.
NIOSH? What's that?
I don't know. National Institute of Occupational. That's the construction certification. But I'm sure, I think there's a hospital certification as well. And I know there's different attitudes about the masks protecting certain individuals, and of course we've allocated all those masks to different areas. That's all, that's fine. We know all of that. My point is, if there was ready supply, and if everything is getting back to normal, everything's so great as far as mm-hmm. hospitals, where is the equipment going now? Like, it's still being stockpiled, it's still being diverted, and these protesters probably can't, we can't donate them 10,000 N95 masks because there aren't 10,000.
Well, they seem to be getting masks, you know? Though. They have the surgical masks.
And they're improvising. They're improvising.
They are.
I don't think that's good enough.
Well,
I don't think that's good enough for this kind of sustained interaction that these phased we're not going back either. No one is saying we're going to slow down, except the governor, I guess. But it just, to me, it's like we would better equip ourselves. We would be going threefold, five times harder as mm-hmm. far as supplying the stuff, making it widely available in every place someone might want to go into, and doubling down on really high-quality stuff, as has been said, especially if in the future there's a possible of a resurgence in cases, whether that's a wave or several waves or just a continuous cycle of increased infection rates. But Even as a hobbyist, why can't I get gloves?
Yeah.
Why can't I get masks?
Well, it's interesting because I'm wondering how many people are actually even wearing gloves. I look at for the masks, and I cross the street if someone's approaching without a mask on. That might sound crazy, but I think that is the right thing to do. I don't even look to see if they're wearing gloves, because, you know, they're not going to spread it to you with their hands, most likely. But it is a good idea to wear these gloves, the kind you find in parking lots all over, because we're so stupid we can't even throw them out properly.
Well, and, like, just for practical reasons, like, just speaking out of experience, say I'm an average person right now, and I've been, you know, using gloves sparingly, but my first aid kit's low.
Mm-hmm.
I want more gloves to add to my first aid kit. Where am I going to go for that? If somebody's bleeding, I won't have gloves because I will have used them or depleted that. You know what I'm saying? It's like we need to have access as we did in a normal sense, and I don't see that being a priority. And that, I think, doesn't – yes, there's a lot of waste. There's a lot of medical waste now as a result of all of this, and that's something absolutely we have to look at. But I just feel like people's access is still at such a reduced level, and at the same time, there's this sort of mixed message about uptake and how and when to use this kind of stuff.
Well, just to give you an idea, I was thinking about this back in April. When thanks to you, we already had a stockpile of gloves because
yeah.
you were involved in other projects. Obviously,
I just did a regular order.
If you use one a day, they're going to disappear. So I figured, okay, let's think a couple of hundred days ahead and get another supply. You couldn't do it. Couldn't do it anywhere in the States. But I found that I could have them shipped to England for some reason. For some reason, you couldn't ship them to the States. They were coming from China. But you couldn't ship them to the States, but you could ship them to England.
Well, they were all being diverted. All of the suppliers were diverting them to first responders in the U.S., anywhere.
Yeah, but, I guess that is true. You couldn't get them as a non-first responder.
Yeah, Amazon was, and like, car places, like auto parts places and home improvement places were all doing the same thing.
Well, I found that I could ship them to England, and so we picked a friend and gave their address and had it shipped to them. 2 months went by, and I kept checking in with the merchant. It was comical because they were so apologetic. They always responded quickly in very broken English, saying that their manager has been disciplined. I was afraid I was getting people hurt by just asking. So are these gloves going to show up? And they would say things like, "Well, your country has sent them back." And my country, of course, being England, because that's where they were going. I've been through the same thing, actually, when we had donations for medical equipment here at Stony Brook. We had equipment shipped from Singapore, and for some reason the United States sent it back to Singapore. It made two trips around the world before it actually got to the right place. So it's a lot of stupidity going on. Anyway, I told them after a while, you know, if this doesn't show up by June, gonna have to ask for a refund. I felt bad, but... You know, I feel worse spending for nothing, so I tried to be nice because nobody else was being nice to them. I looked at the reviews they were getting, and boy, they were being blasted. So I was trying to be as nice as possible. Sure enough, though, at the beginning of June, it showed up. It actually was delivered. So okay, now we have the gloves, except they're in the wrong country. Now we have to get them shipped from England to here. But there are 200 gloves on their way to us, hopefully.
Yeah, I saw the boxes, and they look really beat up.
They've been through a lot, Kyle.
They were definitely for another market because the writing was Chinese or some kind of script. It was not...
Well, I picked the right brand, although for some reason it's written in Chinese.
Yeah, and that's like a global sort of a... in many markets, that is like one of the largest suppliers of gloves. So it was kind of a miracle that even at that point we were able to find someone selling them somewhere. But
it's
readily, like, still an issue. And, I went onto a site of a certain orange home improvement store, and their site has all the N95 masks, you know, 3M, and like, the sort of brands that the American market would have all the time that you'd be familiar with. Well, and they
have them? They're in stock?
No, they said they're all out still, and you're to call the individual stores, but they can't list it at all on the site. The site says limit 10 per customer, but it really says any kind of delivery or pickup to any of that for any of that equipment would be something you'd have to check availability with the stores. I am sure the stores don't have very much. I don't know what the prices are like, but not that I want to go to any one of those stores.
Right.
Still, because of the amount of time you have to spend standing in the spaced out
people
line.
Who don't have masks, yeah.
Yeah, with a wide variety of people and, you know, and grappling and dealing with all of their various levels of belief or non-belief in a virus and a pandemic. But if I was to order them, I'd have to call, and then I'd have to have them, I guess, keep them for pickup or something like that. But it's not back to normal. There is not enough of that stuff for the kind of density I fear we're excited about getting into So I don't know. I don't want to be lulled into too much of a sense of comfort. And frankly, I have some projects where I need gloves and things like that. And I'm just wondering, like, okay, well, if I'm going to be, working on the van or trying to clean some things, how do I even do that? If I have to do some pipe fitting or plumbing or something, I mean, it to me is this annoying thing that we've long since stopped talking about, but is not at all back to what it should be or what even was promised. Like, oh, we're going to do all this stuff and that stuff. Nope, fell by the wayside. I'm not seeing it. I checked. Like I said, these products are not available.
Well, I think people are getting the surgical masks somewhere. I see demonstrators with custom printed ones.
Well, yeah, the reusable ones, I think there's like a cottage industry in that, and there's a lot of transfer, I think, from the garment industry and fast fashion and that kind of retail that's itself been hurt a lot. So they can retool, and if there's a market, maybe keep the lights on selling those kinds of things, custom printed and so forth, which is great. And a lot of people are making them on their own to begin with. But the disposable and other kinds of exam gloves and things that are rated and that you would use for chemicals or protecting yourself when in a high viral load area, that stuff's just still few and far between. It's still sparse.
But you found some reusable gloves that you were able to buy that have been very handy that you don't have to throw out every time you use them. How'd you do that?
Yeah, those were a little bit easier to find on like online retailers, and I think it was sort of a secondary thing because there was less of an emphasis, like especially if you're doing good hand washing, less of an emphasis on the nitrile or like latex exam gloves. And in practical terms, like it's springtime, and we often talk about planting, so a set of gardening gloves kind of was a good idea. But they kind of made sense to just like leave outside or use if you're going to be touching a lot of surfaces more so than normal, but also as a reminder to not touch your face and so forth. So it depends on how you use them, and it was a kind of spontaneous thing that was a result of the sort of the wave or the variability in what the recommendations were, right? Because there's these disposable ones that might help, but they're really unavailable. So, okay, next best thing in my point of view that I could use for things like, projects and chores would be something reusable so that you're not, like, wasting and putting a lot of plastic garbage out into the waste stream.
Right. So I think that makes the most sense to get something that you can wash, you can reuse, and keep yourself safe that way. The mask is the most important thing, though, because that protects other people. If you have an N95 mask, great. Then you're pretty much protected from other people. But most people don't have that, and most people don't really need that. If everybody is wearing a mask, you'll be safe. And that is the thing. And if it becomes harder for people to get these things, they're going to give up. They're not going to even put the effort in. They're going to think it doesn't apply to them, and they're going to be sorely mistaken when this thing does come back in force because of this behavior. I hope it doesn't get to that. I hope we're able to continue acting smart. And I think people around us, for the most part, have been doing just that. Nothing makes me happier than seeing people just acting intelligently, wearing masks in public places. I feel like, you know, we're all in it together. We're all taking care of each other. We don't, you know, want this to get any worse. And we're looking forward to the day where we don't have to do this, but we have to make a few sacrifices. No reason, and unfortunately it's not the case, but there's no reason anybody should be going out of business, anybody should be losing their homes, and I cannot fathom how such things are allowed to happen. If you're in a business that is shut down because of this, your expenses should also be shut down. You should not be paying rent, you should not be paying taxes, your employees should be taken care of by all the funds that you've been paying into over the years. That's what it's for. That's what government is for. You should be taken care of. Yeah, you won't be getting rich, but at least you'll be surviving and you won't lose your business, you won't lose your home. The fact that that's not happening just points to the systemic failure that we have in our society, and that really needs to be looked at and changed quickly. Okay, so let's look at a little bit of what might be good news. Today in England, there's news that there's the first evidence that a drug might be able to improve COVID-19 survival. A cheap, widely available steroid reduced deaths by up to one-third in severely ill hospitalized patients. So it's for a fairly narrow group of people, but a very important group of people who are severely ill. These results were announced just today. The British government immediately authorized the drug's use across the United Kingdom for coronavirus patients, like those who did well in the study. Our researchers said they would publish results soon in a medical journal, and several independent experts said it's important to see details to know how much of a difference the drug, known as dexamethasone, might make and for whom. But Anthony Fauci weighed in on this. Bottom line, it's good news. Significant improvement in the available therapeutic options that we have. Well, it's something. It's something. It's not a cure, but it's some relief for people that are being affected mostly. I'll take it. I mean, I'm not going to take it, but you know, I'll take the suggestion that this is something that could help, and everything that helps is something we should be focused on.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep following treatment options and ideas that are being tested and trialed all over the world. It is an exciting time for some of that research, and I'm really hopeful that people are able to recover faster and not become as ill.
Yeah, that would be nice. Hey, we have to stop for a moment because guess what? It's Radiothon. Radiothon is our biannual. That's twice a year, right? Biannual is once every 2 years. So the Hope Conference is a biannual, and Radiothon is biannual.
Biennial.
Biannual. No, with an A.
Oh, not biennial?
Biennial is once
that's
every 2 years.
Else?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know who thought that up. It's really confusing. But yes, this is our spring fundraiser. It is spring, right?
Yeah, and well, okay. It's the last days of spring. We're celebrating Radiothon and letting summer come in and with a resounding excitement, and
yeah.
that's part of your ability to thank us and support the station, and you can do that by going to WUSB.FM.
Which I understand is down at the moment, but it's being fixed by a staff of professionals and a couple of amateurs, but they're learning.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but no, that's okay. That's okay, because there are some people here that are going to explain exactly what you can do, what you should call, how you can pledge. And all these people did this from their homes, and they all had good... Well, actually, see if you can find the one person who didn't have the good broadband connection. Here, let's take a listen.
Hi, this is Rob, Docus, Abby, Chris, Anastasia, and we are WUSB Student Executive Board.
We hope our listening family and all our Stony Brook University classmates and families are managing well in this precarious time.
We are all home, but helping WUSB stay on the air remotely so we can keep you entertained and informed each day.
For only $5 per month or $60 per year, you can join WUSB's family of radio supporters, enjoy special members' benefits, and get a cool radio thank you gift.
Please help us stay on the air by calling 631-632-6901 or toll-free at 1-888-632-9872 or online at wusb.fm/pledge.
WUSB, the most dangerous station in the nation.
Again, those numbers are 631-632-6901, toll-free at 1-888-632-WUSB, or online at www.wusb.fm/pledge. Thank you.
Thank you. And, yeah, there was one 300-baud connection there.
It sounded like a gramophone or some kind
it
of...
It was from the 1920s, yeah.
Wire recorder.
But what they say is quite true, 631-632-6901. In fact, if you call that number, there are people now who are kind of – this is more staffing than we have when we're in the studio. There are people now, because they're spread out all throughout the planet, answering the phone and taking your pledge. And your pledge goes to keeping WUSB on the air. What an amazing place this has been for us over the past few months. The fact that we're able to put all this together, broadcast from remote locations, everybody is pitching in different ways. Never before has this station proven itself the way it has over the past few months. People are relying on WUSB for information, for just being cheered up, hearing hearing people doing their shows, hearing you know, music and news and enthusiasm, alternative views of all sorts. That's what it's all about, and I'm happy to say that we have really stepped up. So 631-632-6901, as I said, $5 a month, $60 a year. I did the math, and that does add up, and that's not much. $5 a month is nothing, and for us, that's a huge amount, because if enough people do that, it pays a lot of the bills that we really need to pay in order to stay on the air. There is no other radio station like WUSB around here. There is none. All the other stations are, what, NPR, or religion, and those are just the non-commercial stations. We have a voice, students, community, all different ideas, all different thoughts.
And the selections, the brilliant tastes of our programmers and producers make that sort of eclectic and interesting listening something that so many people enjoy. And that's why when we get your pledge, even the smallest amount, it goes really a long way to keeping us on the air. And in doing so, we basically have this unique history. And part of that has been initiatives and projects going forward. I know concerts aren't really being done quite the same way and then as frequently or at all, but we've had great things like Brad Stock and other like Jazz Loft programming that brings a venue to your living room, to your kitchen, wherever you listen to the radio. And those efforts, as well as our archiving project, the great music library of WUSB has accrued for over 35, 40, how I can't even begin to imagine. We've vinyl, we've many formats of music, but we're excited to be bringing in new libraries and also old recordings and other things that add value and add to what producers can put in and put on the air when they're making a show and coming up with some really interesting listening. And that's part of that staying power, having been around and been able to catalog and keep all of that stuff available. That's the kind of community that's what we care about, and that's what you're supporting when you donate.
We embrace the old, we embrace the new, and that goes not just for staff members, but for music and history and all that. You'll hear such a wide variety of material just throughout the course of a single broadcast day. Last Saturday, though, we were listening to Lister, who's been doing the longest-running reggae show in the country, maybe the world. And he had Mark Stern on from years ago. He used to be a staff member here at WUSB. And it was just so amazing hearing those voices coming together. He's up in Massachusetts now. But we're all still family. We're all still communicating with each other, sharing stories, giving insight, playing music, making music many times. It's just such an incredible creative place. And I'm so proud to be a part of it, to have continued to be a part of it since I got involved in the first year they went FM, 1977. But the station existed before them. And great testament to the people back then, some of whom are actually still with us right now on the radio, they were able to have this station that really very few people could receive because it was a carrier current station, meaning you had to plug into the wall at Stony Brook to be able to hear it. But they were able to get record service from record companies, meaning free LPs sent to them so that they had music to play and taken seriously in the music business. So by the time we actually got that FM license in 1977, we were already established. And that, to me, that's a hack. That is an incredible display of skill and fortitude. So it's because of all those efforts of the past that we're here now in the present, making way for the future. And I'm just really proud of those people. I'm proud of the new people that are on the air now, playing all kinds of different material and experimenting. That's what it's all about. And this coronavirus, yeah, pain in the ass, but it has not stopped us.
No, not at all. I'm excited. I want to talk to Lister and some of the other DJs and programmers because we've been kicking around the idea of digitizing some of our vinyl collection now that we've done so much with the compact disc era. But those are the kinds of creative ways that the station has been able to inspire and also continue, as is said so often, to be an experiment and showcase audio and other kinds of programming experiments. and bringing voices to the air, taking calls, those kinds of community efforts. That's what we're here for. That's what the place stands for, and it is an exciting beacon in this radio frequency spectrum.
631-632-6901 is our phone number. Call in, pledge whatever you can afford. Pledge a monthly amount. It really helps out a lot. WUSB.FM is our website. It probably coming back up now. We had some maintenance we had to do, and it's supposed to be fixed any moment. It might already be up. And you can pledge there as well. It's the most amazing thing. But we're talking about preserving things.
Yeah, I've been rebuilding head shells and needles.
You've been doing a lot of that.
For vinyl, I also got, I bought just like a kind of a tough high torque turntable to mess around, and basically wanted, and a lot of them have USB, but that makes it so that it's transferable and you can get stuff into a digital form. I think we came up with a good resolution MP3, and we have a lot of drives and stuff left over from the CDs that we can handle a lot of those kinds of experiments. But I want to do like a test recordings of vinyl with different needles so that we can decide which is sort of our control setup,
right,
to go and do a batch of classic vinyl from the WUSB vinyl archive. So coming up with that, I mean, I've rebuilt and sort of tried to help maintain some of the consumer listening station turntables and all of that stuff. As we build out the new station, we'll have a place, and we want to make sure that various collections, like I know Lister and some of the other shows, have been, as you said, this receiving end for incredible music service, and that's what a radio station is. Mm-hmm. That's what we're here for. So doing the service of honoring that collection and making it searchable, making it something that people can use as a resource, as I said, for more experimentation and inspire musicians and students, and just continue to keep broadcasting and keep the stuff that has provided so much joy, keep it accessible as we've become more technologically skilled and oriented here in 2020.
What makes this place so special is what you're describing here, the effort that's put into preserving technology. The fact that you're fixing turntables and that we're thinking of ways to digitize our vinyl collection, because we have our vinyl collection. Other stations would simply discard something when they decide it's no longer relevant or can be replaced by something else. No, we held on to our CDs. In fact, we spent a few years digitizing nearly a million tracks. We have vinyl. We're going to figure out what to do with that. We have reel-to-reel tapes of all kinds of history that we're in the process of encoding and preserving. Even the equipment from our old board from the 1960s, we were able to preserve and have that on display at our new facility. We care about things that happened in the past. They matter. They happen, and they need to be remembered and marked and learned from. And by pledging to the radio station, you're ensuring that this place continues to exist and that history continues to be learned from. 631-632-6901. I hope we're getting a bunch of calls, because that is how we stay on the air.
Well, there's so much to talk about. I mean, I could go on and on talking about our aspirations and what services that we want to bring, you know, what service we bring, I think, in our volunteering and in our opportunity to broadcast and to talk to listeners and share their letters. Those kinds of things are really an honor. It's a unique ability to be able to sit here and have a conversation with you and everyone else week after week. And it does not go unnoticed when people call, when people write us, and when they just tell us that they thought something was interesting, or they share something with us that they trust will find interesting for other listeners because they know us so well. Those are really special moments. And as I said, any contribution to this station, it goes a really, really long way. I know our general manager, our operations staff, and our engineering teams all thoroughly appreciate people's contributions. And please keep them coming. Please contribute and support community radio. If you're going to do anything commercially, that's one thing. But when you allocate dollars to a nonprofit and a community station like this, you are really providing so much for the community and keeping this space here for as we've said, so many different ideas and creative forms of expression. And it will continue to be that, especially with all of your support.
Speaking of listeners, I just pulled up one of our letters here. And you can write to us, otw@2600.com. OTW, of course, stands for Off the Wall, at 2600.com. We'd love to hear what our listeners say, whether you agree with us, don't agree with us, have critiques, have suggestions, or, God forbid, compliments, and all kinds of things. We want to hear what people think. We want to know they're out there listening, where they're listening from. This is particularly interesting. This is a letter from Ian, who writes to us from Thailand. Yeah, Thailand. Imagine that. And he was actually telling us about the song Live and Let Die that we played a few weeks ago, because that was playing when Trump visited the mask factory, and we had fun with that.
Yeah, it gives the background to the 007 connection.
Yeah, and it was Guns N' Roses, that version. We played the Paul McCartney version, which is the only version I care about because that's what I grew up to. But anyway, he writes, as always, great to hear the show. I'm originally from Long Island, kind of ended up unable to live there as an adult thanks to the insane cost of living. I hear you. I was very bitter about this for a long time, but these days I kind of feel like I dodged a bullet. Over here in Thailand, the COVID recovery rate is about 95%. Only 50 people died out of a population of 68 million citizens, not counting the millions of Westerners, immigrants from other Asian countries, tourists, and business people. Bangkok is significantly bigger than New York City. All Thai cities have high population density. People are generally much more social than Westerners and also looser with the rules. Traffic is mostly motorcycle heavy rather than cars, so people are closer in traffic. Plus, we're much closer to China and get loads of travelers and imports from there. Business is starting to open up in stages. People lost their jobs, but it wasn't as devastating as in the West because, in general, people are more responsible for helping each other. And that's what it's all about. The government did a poor job distributing unemployment benefits, etc. I think there were some protests, but nothing like the insanity happening in America. The temperature checks and arbitrary one-meter distance markings are annoying. By the way, the protests he's referring to are the anti-shutdown protests, not the Black Lives Matter, because this predated that. The temperature checks and arbitrary one-meter distance markings are annoying. Some people wear masks, others don't. Frankly, it's not a huge deal here. Cigarettes and automobiles are still just as deadly as ever, far worse than any virus in history, and nobody is advocating their ban. Alcohol was actually banned for several weeks to discourage socializing. Thai people got antsy, and the king ordered the ban lifted. Interesting. School was supposed to start in early May, but was pushed back to July 1st. They tried to do online classes, which had all types of technical problems. Hydroxychloroquine is not a common medicine here, which actually was a surprise to me since these are the tropics. I've taken it before when traveling. Fact is, despite the fear-mongering on the travel.gov sites, malaria is actually very rare. Maybe in past decades and in very remote areas it posed a huge threat, but not in modern Asian cities. The singer from my old band offered me a large sum of money if I could send some of that drug to him in America, but I couldn't find any at pharmacies. Imagine that. That's what it's come to. Basic meds like antibiotics are available without prescription here, but supplies vary. I cannot say exactly why the U.S. was hit so hard by COVID. It could be just garden variety karma, after all the misery American citizens have caused around the world and at home. But, of course, that's a simplistic view. Obviously, blaming it on political parties doesn't have any positive effect, but that's what Americans seem to be doing, according to the media. They could barely afford housing, health care, transport, and food before the pandemic hit. They don't have a good track record of taking care of one another in difficult times. Talking about America, not Thailand. I'm sure glad I was able to get out when I did, and only wish I'd been smart enough to emigrate earlier in life. Well, I applaud your philosophy of staying in the country and doing what you can to try and change things. I can't pretend to understand it. Keep up the good work. I'll be listening. I use your programs in classes sometimes, too, so your voice gets heard by roughly 550 college students here. Thanks, Ian, for that amazing letter from Thailand. Our voice being heard by 550 college... I can't imagine what they think. But, this is what American English sounds like. I don't know what else to say.
It's non-standard English.
No, it's pretty non-standard.
That's non-standard, okay. Hello, hi. Yeah. Hi. Thanks for listening.
We're sorry, by the way. We're sorry for all the hell we cause and stupidity and things like that.
We try. We try to steer clear of that. We'd like to use our interesting system in more productive ways, but, you know, we rise to the challenges that we face.
And, you know, it's staying in the country, that's one of the reasons why we do that, to help make things better.
Yeah, you want to be a bit of you want to bolster and support and be a bulkhead, a bulwark, a buffer, a brick wall. Yeah, I don't know.
I use that word a lot.
Yes, we're standing firm in our convictions, and you know, when you lose your principles, you invite chaos.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, plus, think of all the other people around that need to be strengthened. We can't all leave. We can't all give up. We have to fight, and we have to make things better. And I've seen a lot of that. I've seen so much good happening over the past few weeks. Of course, tinged with the tragedy that spurred it. But if these injustices are going to continue, at least every time they happen, let's push further and make sure that they never happen again, and that we change the problems that make them happen in the first place. I've seen more of that, and I think it's because so many more people get it now. 20 years ago, this would not have happened. 20 years ago, you would not have seen Confederate statues being torn down. Hey, I didn't even know there were Confederate statues in the Capitol building. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
Not really. I find it a bit odd.
Yeah. And there's actually Confederate monuments in New York? No. I don't understand the logic behind this. The Confederacy was what lost the war. It was anti-U.S. It was racist. It was not a good thing. All right. It doesn't mean that you condemn anyone who's related to somebody from the South. No, of course not.
But it doesn't deserve that context.
Don't glorify it. Don't romanticize it. And for God's sake, don't say that if you tear down the statues, we won't learn from history. No, I think the fact that the statues are up are proving that we don't learn from history.
Use a wiki of some sort.
Sure, whatever you have to use. But
read a book.
The important thing is that you don't need a statue to tell you about history, good or bad. There are no statues to Hitler, and that was a pretty important part of history. You don't need statues to learn. You just need to read and communicate and talk about these things. Less people are having trouble getting that now, which is a great thing to see, but more needs to be done. Of course, you know, there are always people who push it too far. I you know, Winston Churchill, I don't know. I think that might be going too far. The guy did kind of save the world. I don't know. Was he racist? I don't know. I guess. Probably everybody back then was racist, but he wasn't a slave owner. He certainly wasn't as bad as the other side. So, when you push so far that people start to get alienated, that's when you start losing battles. And I think right now it's an easy battle. Right now, there are so many hateful monuments out there for people that didn't do anything except cause misery, and yeah, maybe they discovered a hill or something, and that's it. You know, but it's time. It's time that we recognize the bad that they truly caused. And when it's easy to recognize that, yeah, identify it, act upon it. When it's open to debate, have the debate at least. Have the conversation. Let's not jump to conclusions about things that have not been talked about, that not have been ironed out. So yeah, I am with about 99.9% of all of this. But there's always going to be a little bit that just goes in the wrong direction. Hey, what do you think of Seattle? We only have a minute.
It's so funny watching the stuff from Seattle.
Chad. No, it's not Chad.
Chop. Now it's Chop. Chaz, and then it was Chop.
Wait, Chaz. It was Chaz. I got it wrong the first time. Chaz was... What?
Anyway, people are there.
No, I want to know what it was.
People there
for.
Are just happy that people are talking about Seattle.
What did Chaz stand for?
Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone.
Okay, so it was with a Z. Okay.
Yeah.
And what does Chop stand for?
Capitol Hill Occupied Precinct, or protest. Occupied protest.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, it's that area is always, it's not going to go willingly into any of this. I mean, let's just put it this way. Like, that place, being the way it is as a co-op, I mean, it's not unlikely. There are block parties on that very same street.
Of course.
During the summer. So this has become that. I mean, it's closed off essentially like it's a farmer's market, which it might easily have been closed off during the summer for that anyway.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to diminish it. I do think there's a certain, like, pride, you know, people want to to have the discussion, and they're right to stay there. They're right. I think there's some interesting interviews with people who had protected the precinct. They felt it was relinquished to them so that they could be left to their devices and burn it, and they didn't. So there's a real sense of ownership in Capitol Hill.
Uh-huh.
There was long before this, specifically with the gentrification and sort of Web 2.0, Amazon, programmers and woo girls and stuff. We've talked about that. It's Capitol Hill's an artsy, interesting, really righteous and fantastic area. There's a university down the street, it's a thriving, really cool place, and it's not some place that you can just come in and occupy and people are going to be okay with it. And there, I know a lot of businesses closed down. I've talked to people that live there that are also kind of a little bit over it.
Well,
and
they're closed down already because of the pandemic, so
yeah.
It's a really weird time.
It has been insult to injury. It's not that I think people who are living there resent what's going on in any way, but they're tired, I think, too. And it seems to always end up in the downtown area when so many other parts of the state have as much disparity and right to be upset.
Well, I think
it's been focused in downtown.
People are tired of the police brutality that's been going on, firing
yeah.
tear gas and pepper spray and rubber bullets. It was disgusting watching that in Seattle, as in so many places. So if a bunch of people are going to take over a six-block radius, more power to them. Let's see what they can do. Let's see if they can do it better. And so far they are. So far it seems really peaceful. There are no issues that I can see.
And as good a part of town for that as any. As I said, there'd be a block party there.
You've got Trump, though, threatening it again with military force.
Oh, he's acting like it's at a colony, like it's the rebel encampment or something.
I think people need to double down. I think we need to have 100 more of these things just to show him that we're not going to be intimidated. That's what's important here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with that. I think I support it, and it makes me smile.
He had his reform order today that he announced while surrounded by cops. that's how he's addressing it. Let's give them more money. Let's address the good people. Let's surround me with cops. No activists. No Black Lives Matter people. Nothing like that. Let's support our police more.
You know you're a coward when you roll deep with cops. Talk about police
reform.
I don't
know if he's a coward. I think he's just a jerk. You know, it's not really.
Those aren't mutually exclusive.
Yeah, well, we could talk about this for a very, very long time.
Go on, I'm listening.
Well, there's just one quote that I was watching this morning. Basically, this is what he said. It's not what's quoted in the story. I strongly oppose the radical and dangerous efforts to defend, dismantle, and dissolve our police departments. Yes, he said defend. He meant to say defund, but he said defend. And it was great to watch the closed captioning. Because I had it on at the moment.
Did it correct it or something?
No, there was a long pause while the person was trying to figure out, did he really say that? So if you have that recorded, you have closed captioning, it's funny to watch. Just typical of the days that we live in. Hey, we are out of time. Finn is coming up next. I want to thank everybody for listening.
Thanks for donating.
Yes, please. I thank everybody for calling. If you haven't called, not too late, 631-632-6901. Operators standing by right now.
WUSB.FM.
That's our website. OTW@2600.com. That is our email address. And we will see you next week. Have a good night.
Bye, everybody.
Close up the window and pull down the shade. Turn and lie back on your bed. Take all the sheets and the blankets in hand. pull them up over your head. Cause nobody knows when the alum Minerva will spread its four wings and take flight. Nobody knows, but it's said that the alum Minerva flies only at night. All the day long and then all through the night, we do the hop-flick waltz. We can't decide on what virtues it has, but we're quite aware of its faults. And nobody knows when the owl of Minerva will spread its four wings and take flight. Nobody knows, but it's said that the owl of Minerva flies only at night. The top of